Before we start this episode, I'd like to introduce y'all to our friends Allison and Maggie's podcast, Coffee and Cases. Like Gone Cold, Coffee and Cases discusses cases seldom heard or often overlooked. I'll let them tell you about it.
Greetings from the Bluegrass State.
That's Kentucky, if y'all didn't know.
We want to tell you about the hottest new podcast on the block, Coffee and Cases. If you fancy yourself an at-home detective,
if you find yourself yelling at the TV during that new true crime documentary,
then you, my friend, are a certified sleuthhound.
Just like us.
On Coffee and Cases podcast, you'll hear about the missing, the murdered, and the unsolved.
But the cases you've rarely, if ever, heard about.
All from the perspective of two teacher friends, rule followers, and self-proclaimed scaredy cats. Join me, Allison,
and me, Maggie,
each week as we take on cases that are often overlooked but are screaming for justice.
Finally, a true crime podcast where you don't have to monitor the foul language.
Coffee and Cases is a true crime guilty pleasure that you don't actually have to feel guilty about. Check out Coffee and Cases every Thursday for a new episode on your favorite podcasting app.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
For several years in the mid and late 2000s, the United States Central Intelligence Agency built numerous bases scattered around southern and eastern Afghanistan. The facilities were constructed to coordinate and carry out what they called precisely targeted drone strikes in Pakistan, aimed at taking down key members of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, missions for which the use of local informants was a necessity. These attacks weren't simply taking out members of the militant terror groups, however, no matter what they named them. Civilian casualties were also a commonplace in what the U.S. deemed the counter-terror operations. Tensions were high between the Pakistani government and the United States, who, by 2009, had significantly escalated the drone attacks despite the increased loss of civilian life. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda responded in kind as the war raged on. On Wednesday, December 30th, 2009, an Afghan security chief picked up a claimed informant at the Afghanistan-Pakistan border and drove him back to his place of operations, Forward Operating Base Chapman, located in southeast Afghanistan in the Khost province. Out of respect for the informant, who said he had information related to a high-ranking Al-Qaeda leader, the man was not searched. And when they arrived at Camp Chapman at 4:30 p.m., the informant and the Afghan security chief were waved through three security checkpoints. After driving deep into the walls of the base, where eight officials eager to debrief the informant were waiting, the car came to a stop. As he was approached, the man detonated the explosives well hidden in his vest. Five CIA officers, two CIA contractors, an Afghan security chief who picked the suicide bomber up, and a Jordanian intelligence officer were killed. Because of his work with United States forces in Afghanistan's Khost province and at Camp Chapman, Riaz Sardar Kill was able to bring his family to America, his pregnant wife Zarmina, and their newborn baby, Lena. As is the case with countless families there, the Sardar Kills were no strangers to the seemingly endless war that plagued the region. The deadly blast at Camp Chapman in 2009 was only one of the many suicide bombings that year. In fact, Riaz Sardar Kill's father, who was the commander of an Afghan battalion that supported and aided U.S. troops, and Riaz's brother were killed in one such attack. A grandfather and an uncle the man's children would never know. In 2019, when Riaz and his family finally left their war-ravaged and terror-ridden homeland behind, the Sardar Kill family looked forward to a life free of tragedy and death. But in late 2021, Tragedy found Riaz and his wife Zarmina when their daughter, 3-year-old Lena, vanished. Lena Sardarkil was born on February 20, 2018, to parents Riaz and Zarmina. The Sardarkil family is from the Paksha province of Afghanistan, an area in the country's east where the civilian population has undergone decades of terror due to Soviet occupation, followed soon after by the formation of the Islamic fundamentalist militant movement, the Taliban, and then an invasion and occupation by the United States. Following the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, the Taliban fled to Pakistan. But the United States' mission was hardly accomplished, and the war raged on for 2 decades. Even though his father wished for him a college education and a career far from the throes of war, Lena's father, Riaz, felt he had no other means to protect and provide for his family than to join the military himself. From 2013 until his family left Afghanistan in 2019, Riaz Sardarkil served as an Afghan soldier, working alongside his American counterparts in the Coast Province and at Camp Chapman, a base that had been the target of several Taliban and Al-Qaeda attacks. Although in the late 2010s, negotiations between the U.S. and the Taliban looked to be headed in a positive direction, at times, CIA-backed Afghan military strike forces continued to carry out missions that resulted in fatalities, including civilians and children, and diplomacy stalled. Riaz Sardarkil's work consisted mostly of intelligence, a desk job essentially, he says. But his value to the U.S. military's effort was undoubtedly high, since it led the Taliban to send death threats to the man and his family. To protect them, Riaz sought and was granted special visas for him, his wife, and baby to move to the United States. He didn't want to die as an Afghan soldier like his father had 10 years earlier. And like his old man, 26-year-old Riaz wanted a better future for his children. After traveling to the U.S., Riaz, Zarmina, and Lena Sardarkil settled in San Antonio, Texas. At the time, before the fall of Kabul, San Antonio's Afghan refugee population was scant. But refugee resettlement agencies in the city placed the Sardarkil family near others from their region of Afghanistan. They ended up at the Villas del Cabo apartments. The complex, located in a northwest working-class neighborhood at 9400 Fredericksburg Road, near the city's medical center area, was hardly ideal if tenant reviews are any indication. Loud residents, vandalism and other crime, poor maintenance and groundskeeping, mold, and insect infestations are just some of the negative comments left by tenants, and they vastly outnumber anything positive or even neutral. Perhaps the most ominous for this case was left by a resident reviewer in 2020 who blamed the vandalism to their vehicles on, quote, the hordes of unsupervised kids, ages 2 to 14, that run around all hours of the day and night screaming and throwing anything they can find, end quote. The living conditions might not have been ideal, but it beat the daily fear of suicide bombers and friendly fire back in Afghanistan. And anyway, Riaz was working hard to improve his family's situation. Perhaps the one good thing the Villas del Cabo apartments had to offer the Sardarkil family was the many other Afghan families that lived in the complex, which gave them the comfortable aspect of their old home and lessened the stressful expectation of acclimating to their new home country. Before long, the family was welcomed into the shared culture that tight-knit community offered. Zarmina quickly befriended the Afghan women and mothers who resided at the complex, as well as others from a diversity of backgrounds. Meanwhile, Riaz became highly active in the local Afghan Council, a mobilizing group that provides various types of assistance to Afghan refugees in San Antonio. He drove for a few different ride-hailing services and delivery companies as he awaited his commercial driver's license. Everything was going well for the Sardarkil family, including Lena, who had a new little brother to play with and dote on. Lena was playful and, although shy, she and her brother got along well with the other kids around the complex. In fact, the Sardarkil home was a meeting spot for Lena's little friends. There, they played beauty shop, and Lena often shared her favorite treat with her friends, lollipops. Because of their nearly constant interaction with other children at the complex, Lena and her brother were picking up some English words, but the three-year-old girl mostly spoke only Pashto, the lesser used of the two official languages of Afghanistan, but extremely common nonetheless. Even with the new relationships with her friends, Lena still venerated her loving parents. She followed them around closely, minded them, and mimicked them. When they knelt to pray, Lena did as well. When she was 3 years old in August of 2021, Lena accompanied her mother and brother on a trip to Afghanistan to care for Zarmina's ailing parents. By then, Riaz was doing long-haul truck deliveries and could not join them due to work. The trip was to be long but uneventful, besides the unrest that Zarmina Sardarkil had grown all too familiar with growing up in Afghanistan. However, the mother was not aware of the abrupt chaos that was to come. Anyone who remembers the fall of Kabul knows how dangerous it was to be in that region of Afghanistan in August 2021. Following the February 2020 deal between the U.S. and the Taliban, American attacks there had been drastically reduced. In April of 2021, it was announced that the United States military would fully evacuate the country, honoring the deal made in the previous administration, and urged civilians to leave as soon as possible. The Taliban began a major offensive the following month after a significant number of U.S. troops had withdrawn, the Taliban taking control of provinces one after the other, quickly in rapid succession. With only two U.S. military units remaining in Kabul, the Taliban surrounded the capital city by mid-August. Chaos erupted as Taliban fighters ignored their commander's orders and advanced into the city itself as soldiers and police surrendered. After a 20-year military effort in Afghanistan, the Taliban took control of the capital city, essentially, in a single day. Civilians flooded the Kabul airport, the only safe way out of the country since it was still under U.S. and NATO control. Desperate to escape back to their new home, Zarmina Sardarkil and her children, 3-year-old Lena and her 2-year-old son, were among the thousands of Afghans that surrounded the Kabul airport on August 26, 2021. If the airport fell, leaving would be extremely difficult. Mere meters away from Zarmina and her children, a suicide bomber detonated the explosives he carried on his belt. The blast killed 169 Afghan civilians, 13 U.S. soldiers, and knocked little Lena to the ground. She lost consciousness as her mother and other relatives there began to think the worst, that she was another casualty of the terror attack. Their hope returned when the little girl opened her eyes and began responding. She was okay. From San Antonio, Riaz arranged for his wife and children to be taken back to his father-in-law's home to await safe transport back to the United States. Like their move to Texas 2 years before, Zarmina and their children's stay in and departure from Afghanistan had to be kept secret for fear of Taliban retribution. Eventually, their exit was arranged and carried out by U.S. officials. Immediately following the fall of Kabul, hundreds more Afghan refugees poured into San Antonio. The city would later be the target of the Texas Attorney General for violating the state's anti-sanctuary city laws. 4 months after the suicide bomber's blast nearly took her life, little Lena Sardar Kill was stir-crazy. Because the previous week had been rainy and had turned cold for the weekend, the kids had been stuck inside for many days. Finally, on Monday, December 20th, 2021, the sun shone bright and there was seldom a cloud in the sky. It was still a little chilly out, but at almost 60 degrees and sunny, it was an ideal winter day for frolicking children. Early that afternoon, Riaz returned home from work, and Lena greeted her father by jumping in his lap. She sweet-talked him into promising her more makeup so she and her friends could do their thing. If there was ever a father who was a sucker for his little girl, it was Riaz. Riaz's work as a commercial truck driver was going well, and he was also very well compensated. Providing for the family's needs was no longer a problem at all. Riaz mostly felt lucky to have his family and his beloved toddler daughter's brush with death in Afghanistan only exacerbated that feeling. Lena was the man's baby, his light, and he never wanted her anywhere close to danger again. Zarmina, too, was 3 months pregnant with the couple's third child, so this winter was an especially joyous time for the Sardar Kill family. And there's another reason that made it so. Following the fall of Kabul, Riaz's brother and Zarmina's brothers left Afghanistan and sought asylum in America. Finally, they had made their way to San Antonio, and the family had a big reunion dinner planned. It would be the first both Riaz and Zarmina would have with their brothers in 2 years. That afternoon, the children, like their parents, were preparing for the evening's dinner party by dressing in their best. Lena in a fancy red dress and black shoes. Riaz left that afternoon to visit with a friend who was in town from Austin, and, tired of being cooped up, the kids proceeded to beg their mother to let them play outside. Sometime just before 5 p.m., Zarmina relented to her children's pleas, put their jackets on them, both black, and Lena and her little brother ran outside to join the group of kids playing at the playground. Zarmina followed behind them. The playground was completely visible from the front door of the Sardar Kill apartment, so even though they'd run ahead of their mother, she observed the children all the way there. Next to the playground was a small concrete soccer court and a large wooden canopy covering a cooking area with three charcoal grills elevated and set in concrete. Though the playground was fenced in, at least one portion of the fence was damaged and down, and it appears it had been for quite some time. As the kids played, Lena ran back to her mother so she could twist the cap off a water bottle before the child quickly headed back to her playmates. Zarmina watched as her daughter ran up and down some stairs with other kids, and then ran around the court and near a large tree. For several minutes, Zarmina kept close watch of the toddler and her little brother, until sometime after 5, when the little girl wandered off from her mother and brother, going in the direction of the parking lot, though not anywhere near it. Not yet. Zarmina took her eyes off Lena for a few minutes, as she was distracted by her far less coordinated and capable 2-year-old son. After no more than 5 minutes passed, Zarmina looked back at the playground, her eyes sifting through the many children as she tried to get a look at her daughter, then the soccer court, followed by the covered picnic area. But she didn't see Lena anywhere. Continuing to scan, Zarmina expected to see the girl come out from behind a wall or a tree, any one of the countless nooks, crannies, or through one of the narrow breezeways she'd usually pop out from. But as every second passed with no sign of her daughter, time seemed to get slower and slower, until it seemed to stop altogether. The mother became inundated with fear and panic. Zarmina set out looking for Lena, but she was nowhere to be found outside. Thinking she might have missed her daughter slipping past her and making her way back to the apartment, Zarmina searched there. She found nothing. Though she was in a panic, the woman fought off thinking the worst and tried to remain calm. Surely, Zarmina thought, Lena had accompanied a friend to their apartment to use the restroom, get a drink, or play with a toy. While yelling for her daughter, she knocked on the doors of every neighbor she knew that had kids, expecting to see Lena at each one. Zarmina grew colder with fear at every unit she tried. After continuing to walk the grounds for about 30 minutes, Zarmina called Riaz on his cell phone. Lena, she told the father, had disappeared. Riaz rushed home and, within minutes, found his wife in a state of shock. He began frantically searching the Villas del Cabo apartments and the neighboring complex. Also refusing to think the worst, Riaz told himself that someone from the Afghan or Muslim community had invited Lena in for a visit, something that was relatively commonplace. But as time went on with no other word from any other family, Riaz couldn't stop his mind from wondering. The same horrifying sentence repeated over and over in his head. Lena has been kidnapped. Overcome with fear, but part of a community that is very wary of law enforcement at best, completely distrustful at worst, Riaz and Zarmina phoned Lawung Mangal, a local Afghan community leader. Riaz didn't know what to do, he told Lawung. While he fully understood the missing girl's father's apprehension to do so, Lawung told Riaz there was no more time to waste. He had to call the cops immediately. More than an hour after his daughter vanished, at 6:50 p.m. on Monday, December 20th, 2021, Riaz Sardar Kil called the San Antonio police and reported her missing. At 7:15, an officer arrived, and an investigation began. By 8 p.m., the Villas del Cabo apartment complex was swarming with police. The sun was down, but the lit city streets and the waning gibbous moon provided at least some light with which to search for the missing girl, 3-year-old Lena Sardar Kil. From the get-go, the language barrier between the Sardar Kils and authorities complicated the case. Zarmina and Riaz's native language is Pashto, and both spoke few words of English. They relied on translators like Lawung Mangal to collect the details of Lena's last known location. Without a doubt, the language barrier led to conflicting accounts of the events surrounding the 3-year-old's disappearance, which made the investigation far more difficult than it might have otherwise been. San Antonio Police Chief William McManus and his men hit the ground running. The FBI provided them resources immediately, including manpower. Officers and agents searched every last apartment at the complex at least once, and that night and the next day they combed nearby dumpsters, ditches, fields, wooded areas, and vacant buildings, anywhere a child might have wandered off to explore, or been placed as the result of a much darker scenario. Officers were stationed at the exits of the apartments. Police didn't want anyone coming in or going out without knowing exactly what was in their vehicles, Chief McManus commented. An all-points bulletin immediately went out providing Lena Sardar Kill's name and description. She stands approximately 4 feet tall and weighs around 55 pounds, the description detailed. The child's eyes are brown, as is her hair, which is straight, shoulder length, and was in a ponytail that day. Lena was last seen wearing a red dress, black jacket, and black shoes. The department also wasted no time taking to social media. They posted Lena's photo, description, and a brief synopsis of what was known at the time to Twitter and Instagram. SAPD also began a series of posts to their Facebook page that kept Lena's face out there. By 10:30 p.m., even without the usually strictly required criteria of a vehicle description, the Amber Alert for Lena went out across the greater San Antonio area. Although police refused to say outright that they believed Lena was abducted, the release of the alert suggested that they did indeed, and suggested that they believed she was in significant danger. The Amber Alert soon went out statewide. As seems to be the case with virtually every Amber Alert, however, many did not receive it until some time after it was issued, not until around 10:50 p.m., and many others claimed they did not receive it at all. Back at the scene, cadaver dogs were brought in to search the complex, but picked up no scent, neither on the grounds nor in any apartment. A police tracking dog was led around the fence line of the Villas del Cabo, which was entirely gated. It should be noted that several residents discussed that the front entry gate had been broken for some time and continued to be long after Lena Sardar Kill vanished. The tracking dog picked up the girl's scent briefly, but lost it at the parking lot. A police helicopter searched the surrounding area, but found nothing.
Children don't just vanish into thin air.
San Antonio Police Special Victims Unit Detective Herman Fuentes later commented, referring to whether the circumstances of the disappearance seemed suspicious. He added,
"There are suspicious circumstances based on the child's age and the fact that we have not found any evidence to indicate where she is."
The cops were able to get surveillance video from at least one unit at the complex, but at the time, they said little more about it other than they were trying to piece it together with the witness accounts they'd gathered. The day after she went missing, a visibly sleep-deprived Riaz Sardar Kill spoke to the news through an interpreter. He and Zarmina had never been as saddened, Riaz said. The father said he and Zarmina had been questioned for many hours by San Antonio police detectives and were expecting to speak with FBI agents for many more. But that was hardly the worst the Sardar Kill family would go through. On the next episode of Gone Cold, we'll discuss not only the leads called in and followed, but also the hate and harassment Lena's parents were forced to endure during the very worst time of their lives. If you have any information about the disappearance of Lena Sardar Kill, please call the San Antonio Police Department's Missing Persons Unit at 210-207-7660. Crime Stoppers of San Antonio at 210-224-7867. Or the FBI's San Antonio Field Office at 210-225-6741. If you have not already, look for Gone Cold on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter by searching Gone Cold and looking for the Texas logo. If you'd like to support the show and get the episodes ad-free, go to patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Thanks to all of you who support us there. It's a huge deal to us. If you're not in a position to help Gone Cold financially, but would like to in some other way, well, I've got just the thing. Leaving us a 5-star rating and written review on iTunes particularly helps Gone Cold's visibility. The more folks who find us and listen, the greater chance someone with information about a case hears the show and comes forward with what they know. Every little bit helps, and we appreciate y'all's support immensely, however you choose to give it. Sources for this episode can be found in the episode's show notes. Thanks for listening, y'all.